Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Playwright, how are you doing, Eric?
I just want to be John Matuszak in Goonies. Let me out of the basement to hang out with Chunk and his friends.
Eric, you got to stop appealing to the Zoomers in this way.
Okay. Only Denny even knows what the quote Goonies are. Even I'm too young for the Goonies. I'm 37. I've never heard of the Goonies.
Yeah, nobody. You've lost everybody under 40, Eric, unfortunately.
Damn. Don't get me wrong. I saw the Goonies VHS at Best Buy back in the day. That doesn't mean I watched it.
Is it a bad time to mention that Corey Feldman was in the Goonies? It's where he come when it starts.
Corey, you could have gotten away with the Corey Feldman reference like 10 years ago. Now, Corey, I don't know.
He's back. He's the comeback king, guys.
He's the comeback kid. We are the comeback kids because we're coming back to some of our favorite topics. You cannot stop us from talking about Brock Bowers, even if you try.
You can
try. Many have failed. And from Jaden Daniels. Then we're going to ask Eric some more like up and down questions, some more open-ended questions. We're going to ask him Malik Nabers versus Marvin Harrison Jr., of course, about Brock Bowers, of course, about Jaden Daniels. But then who he thinks might be a reach amongst like the commonly mocked first-round skill players, some of like forgotten, quote-unquote, by us. I don't think a lot of people have forgotten Troy Franklin, but we kind of have. Xavier Worthy. USC running back Marshawn Lloyd. We have time. We're going to get to Bo Nix. We're going to get to under-the-radar running back Eric loves and under-the-radar receiver that he loves. But Eric, let's just start right off the top with the easiest question maybe, or the most open-ended question, I should say. Who is your favorite skill player in the 2024 draft class? Even if it's an obvious answer, even if it's Caleb Williams, who is your favorite offensive skill prospect in this draft class?
Sure. Do quarterbacks count as skill positions?
I don't know. I always wonder that. I always lump them in with skill players.
I think that seems like the consensus take is that they're skill position players. So if you have a quarterback, Eric.
I mean, Kirk Cousins is not a skill player, but I mean.
Well, okay. When you put it like that, they don't sound like skill position players.
Tough. You know, like the Drew Bledsoe, the Tom Brady era, there's not a lot of skill there. I suppose. And it's only quarterback. But I would have to go with Marvin Harrison Jr. probably. It's real close. It kind of dovetails with the Nabers or Marvin Harrison. It's very close between those two for me. You'll have the Nabers defenders who talk about his explosiveness. Led the country in explosive plays, second in missed tackles forced. I mean, he's extremely difficult to corral on those quick curls and slants. Whereas on the other side, Marvin Harrison Jr. is much more of a downfield threat, in terms of his ability to track the ball downfield, his deep success rate, all of that stuff, the way that he manipulates the sidelines and, is a freak at 205 pounds. But you look at him in person and you're like, this kid looks 225, but that's why he can move so fluidly and so quickly. Because he has those broad shoulders, but is relatively light at 205. So that's
I'm with you. I'm glad I'm not on an island because I've always kind of double and triple checked his listed weight because I'm like, no, this guy is much bigger, right?
He looks scary.
Like,
yeah,
this
he
guy's
looks
like
a rocked up 230. Yeah,
yeah, and but no, you said 205. It is shocking, but it's true. I verified it many times because I'm never quite sure. Eric, why do you think, well, I guess we might know the answer here, but why do you think the, I don't know, consensus on Marvin Harrison Jr. has dropped. I want to say plummeted, but at least dropped, decreased a little bit over the past month with, you know, him not testing very much.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, what is the combine? You know, I feel like we're having a real, you know, conversation that is happening again about what the obligations is to the player to go there. You know, if he doesn't want to go and in theory improve his value, then he doesn't have to do it. You don't have to select him. He doesn't have to go and do the underwear Olympics. So that doesn't bother me too much. You know, neighbors did the same sort of thing, you know? So I think we're going to see more and more of that happen. We know about Caleb Williams. Obviously, we heard the first question he got at the podium up there about whether he's ready to compete from a dynasty fantasy person. So
fantasy, quite literally in bio.
Quite literally in the bio. We all know. We all know what it is. And, you know, that was obviously much snickering and consternation was made out of that. So I guess the point about the combine, I'm not too worried about. But with the fall, I just think it comes from – this happens every year. It's like prospect malaise where
– Isn't this really just boredom? Like we've known he's the wide receiver one in this class for 3 years. And like trying to poke holes in it.
Yeah. For me, the moment where I realized, you know, that so much of this is just manufactured talking points is when Kayvon Thibodeau a couple of years ago was talking about how he didn't care about football. And he was enough of a football guy because he wanted to start up a charter school in inner city L.A. when he grew up in order to try to educate children. And I'm like, okay. Have we reached a point where this is getting a little ridiculous now? I think that's kind of where we're at. Everybody's got to have something to talk about. I'm sick and tired of draft Twitter. Can't wait for the draft to happen. You know, let's get the hot takes out of the way and get on to actually having something tangible to talk about and some actual, you know, commitments being made on the team side with players.
With that being said, Eric, I mean, come on, Malik Nabers might be better than Marvin Harrison.
Right? It might be. Yeah, no, that's fair. I don't think it's not fair to besmirch Marvin Harrison Jr.'s ability just because people might look at Malik Nabers and say, this guy is extremely explosive, 90th percentile PFF grades to all four levels, and a just absolute demon when it comes to breaking tackles. He's got that full profile that you can look at Harrison and say, oh, well, he's not a tackle breaker. He's not a yak guy. You can do it all with Nabers, so I get it.
The moment Malik Nabers moved ahead, Marvin Harrison Jr., on my personal draft board, my draft board is two people. It's Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison Jr. Kyle already knows the answer to this question. It was when Marvin Harrison Jr. was too scared to suit up against the Mizzou Tigers in the Cotton Bowl Classic in Dallas, Texas.
He was. And he said, I'm terrified.
He did. He said he was too scared to play in Mizzou.
By the way, Eric is talking about the draft Twitter. I would call it draft X. Formerly Twitter.
Such a good company, man.
We've gotten to the point where we have now today, the discourse is a negative comp for Caleb Williams is Prince.
Yes.
The early departed late rock star Prince.
Eric, Eric has been on X today. Maybe
I was going to say, Eric and I are busy.
Right, guys, I'm in the lab.
We're both in the lab. We are very busy working on work. What is the Prince thing going on?
Help.
This is not a joke. I believe it was on the Pablo Torre show. A scout or coach or something said another scout or coach told him, like, well, who is this guy, Prince?
Prince.
And, he's been negatively compared to Prince.
Yeah.
Dearly beloved.
And then many people started responding with GIFs or YouTube clips of Prince absolutely ripping an amazing guitar solo.
How
it's actually a very good comp, and we should not be worried about it. So Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, they're both good. What listeners of this show already know, though, is that Brock Bowers is not good, Eric, right?
Yeah.
No. We keep debating Brock Bowers. He didn't test. People are more worried about it with him than they are with Marvin Harrison Jr. He's on the smallish side. He was so productive, though. But he has the injury history, blah, blah, blah. But where do you fall on the Brock Bowers debate, quote, unquote?
Get him ball knower. Go at
him. There might not actually even be a
Eric.
Debate. Yeah, there might not be a debate because I think most people think he's amazing. So just tell us what you think about Brock Bowers. Will he go in the top 10? Does he deserve to go in the top 10? And do the positives far outweigh the negatives?
Well, speaking of Prince, let's get crazy. Let's get nuts. Okay. This is where we're at. It's Brock Bowers time. When it comes to Bowers, you got to remember I'm a college fantasy guy. So I've lived the Brock Bowers experience for the past 3 years. I remember the furor coming out of high school for Mr. Bowers, but we've already kind of been through the full life cycle of it. So when it gets to the draft, it's like, all right, we've been through these narratives. He's 6'3", 235. You know, that's around what he played at, what he was listed at in college, like 6'2 and change, 235. That is an undersized tight end by NFL standards in H-back possible, sort of usage. But
Josiah DeGura is what you're saying.
Yeah, oh, exactly. You know, maybe a glorified Isaiah Likely. We all love Isaiah
What about
Likely.
Anthony Firkser? All of the classics.
Oh, let's play the hits, guys. So, yeah, he's got that move element to him. But in unlike those luminaries we just discussed, he's just an amazing athlete for that size to where you can flex him out wide. You can put him in the slot. You have him run the Ys. Have him go off as the H-back. Give him a carry or two if you want to in a goal line situation, where he's jetting across the formation. You're getting all that from a scheme versatility standpoint with Bowers. You see the body control, on his catches going down the seam. I mean, he's lethal and really tough to tackle. Like my concern with him is down the seam. He doesn't have that 265 Gronk size, but you remember what they used to do after a while. It's like, all right, well, we're just going to take this guy's knees out. Fine. You're going to come down the seam and just right in the middle of all the action, and they're going to loft it up there to him. Well, that's what's going to happen, And I kind of wonder about him being a little defenseless in his lower half, in the NFL and how they could choose to go after him. But, from a fantasy standpoint, he has the athleticism to do it. It's a matter of if that length and if the non-traditional dimensions of the Kincaids at 6'5", 250 length, the ability to go up outside of his frame, which Bowers can do, but is he going to be able to get the separation he did in college? And I think that's what everybody's looking at and trying to project from his less than prototypical frame and profile.
I will say on this show, we've established two things. One is that Brock Bowers is freakishly productive and maybe legendarily good as an actual yards and touchdown producer. Okay.
Yeah.
And Kyle has helped me see this light. Also extremely small, like you said, we talked about last week. I mean, we're talking with Hayden Winks about he's 12th percentile weight.
Yeah.
He's like 15th percentile height.
And that weight was at the combine too, in which he didn't test at the combine.
Right.
My assumption is he got his weight up. As Eric pointed out, you said he played at like 235, and I think he weighed
235 right around there.
What did he weigh in? 241, if I remember correctly. It was in the 240s. Exactly. And he didn't test the combine, which would sort of, you put two puzzle pieces together. He put on some weight. He knew he'd be slow at said weight. He doesn't test. Like, it's very obvious to see what he did there. So, yeah, he's probably less than, 12th percentile weight at tight end.
He's also 100th percentile, had vaguely experimental ankle surgery. I guess the tightrope isn't really experimental at this point, but that one bothered me. This, the kindest injury history, especially at his size. The guy already has a bit of an injury bill, not, a super concerning injury bill. There are people entering this draft with far more concerning injury histories. Michael Penix, how many times do you have this operation?
Yes.
But
come on. You know what he said? You know what Michael Penix said just today? It. He said, "You want to give me X-rays and MRIs? You go ahead and do that." And he's talking to you, Rotopat.
You know what Michael Penix said? He said, "I got one more in me." Anytime they ask him, "Can you get a catastrophic injury?"
No. I thought you said MRI.
He finished the statement with, "If you want to measure me, give me an EKG." And that's what I'm saying. Look, you got to measure this guy's heart and his dog.
What does that have to do with Ghostbusters?
His heart stays EKG. 72.
Oh, EKG. Yes.
His heart stays 72, come shine or rain. No one will understand this reference, except for maybe Eric Froton. And Eric does not understand it. I can tell from his blank face. It's a Grateful Dead, Grateful Dead lyric.
We're knocking it out with the Zoomers. We got Ghostbusters. We got Prince. We got Goonies. We got... What'd you just say?
The Grateful Dead. Zoomers are co-opting all sorts of the Dead iconography, by the way. I saw a Zoomer the other day wearing a Dead hat.
Oh, I was going to say, I think you're okay making,
you can make very superficial references to the Grateful Dead. You don't need deep cuts on their lyrics. That won't get us.
It's from U.S. Blues.
Yeah, real quick, no, sorry. I love you, Pat.
Real quick on Brock Bowers. And your guys, group mock, Kyle, Eric, Connor Rogers have a group mock draft now up on rotoworld.com. Yep. We have Brock falling to 12th, to the Broncos at 12. That's where Kyle sent him. Do you think he's going to fall outside the top 10, Eric? I mean, and would that be disappointing? I don't think that would really be qualified as disappointing for him at this point. But let's say this. Will he make it past the Jets at 10?
You know, that's really the pivot point for him. You know, are the Jets going to go with the shiny new toy as opposed to saying, all right, we saw the pictures of Aaron Rodgers' left leg. It looks like, you know, a forearm at this point when it comes to the muscularity of it. So do they want to go with a Fuaga, Fatanu, Fashanu, the list, the names there, or do they want the shiny new toy? And I'm gunning. I talked with Connor about it. Connor, leaning tackle. So I will go with the most plugged-in Jets aficionado that I know on that. I agree with Connor. I think you're going tackle there.
Did Connor have Jets in our mock? I think conveniently, like, I don't know if that was intentional or not by our producers, but I think he did, and I think he did go tackle, if I remember.
He did.
Correctly.
He went.
He did. I think he took Fuaga.
Fuaga.
Funaga.
OL from Oregon State. I definitely have heard of him before right this moment.
Man, Eric, you describing Aaron Rodgers' leg as a forearm.
Listen, he was gonna play last year. I don't care what you haters say. He was gonna play.
He was gonna play.
Are you like a Johnny Cochran? We don't care what the haters say. Rodgers was gonna play.
He was gonna play. Beautiful. No doubt about it. And there's no doubt about that. We're gonna take a short break. We need a new Sight in the Dead, Sight in the Goonies. We'll be right back after this.
While no one knows what tomorrow may bring, Bridgestone is working toward a more positive outlook. With innovations like developing a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials. It's just one of the many ways Bridgestone is making a difference today for generations to come. Because that's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
Jake from State Farm here, hanging out with Mel's Mow and Grow. Mel chose State Farm for small business insurance because his local agent is a small business owner too. So she knew how to help him personalize his policies. And now he's rolling in the green. Like a good neighbor. Guys, I'm trying to do the line.
Oh, sorry, Jake.
It's all good. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The NFL draft kicks off Thursday. We have you covered with our mock drafts, positional rankings, player interviews, and news updates around the league. Go to NBCSports.com/NFL draft today for insight leading into round one, and check back throughout the draft for analysis of every single pick. That's going to include, a blurb on every single player, a recap article each night, a day two mock draft from Mr. Eric Froton, draft grades from Froton and Kyle. We are going to have so much content up on the site. And we've finished all of it, right? Started the pre-draft profiles I've been assigned. We're going to have it all ready to go the Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday. That includes the pre-draft profile I need to write on Jaden Daniels, Eric Froton. You gave me the dope on Jaden Daniels yesterday. Not that I needed any more information on him. A guy we've talked a lot about, a guy we've screamed a lot about. Eric, I think you're more on our side where you're concerned about Jaden Daniels' NFL prospects. But I asked you yesterday, we were talking on the phone. We keep hearing the negative case. Clearly, there's a positive case being made, not just on draft Twitter, but in NFL front offices. It just seems like it would be a complete stunner if he fell outside the top three at this point. What is keeping Jaden Daniels locked in to the top of draft boards, both real and imagined? And is it really, is it just the long runs, or is there more to it than that?
Well, if you're going to drop a stunner on me here live, then you're going to get a Stone Cold reference. All right. That's how things go around here with me.
And there goes our last Zoomer. They're gone.
Oh, hell yeah. So when it comes to Jaden Daniels, I think what he does best, you get two aspects of his game. Deep passing being one. Sure, he has Malik Nabers, already mentioned. You have Brian Thomas, who is also almost assuredly going to be a first-round wide receiver, that he's got those two on the outside. He's also got Mason Taylor, who was Jason Taylor's son, former defensive end for the Miami Dolphins, another Zoomer favorite. But they also have him at tight end, Mason Taylor. He will be drafted in 2 years. He's exceptional. So he had plenty to throw with. But it doesn't belie the fact. I mean, his deep passing grade, 99th percentile, 147 NFL passer rating on deep throws, and a 64% deep completion rate with a 27-1 big time throw to turnover worthy play ratio. So numbers wise, it's all there. He is probably the best deep passer in the entire draft, in the entire country, probably from last year. But he did it in his fifth year. You know what I mean? It took him, those first 4 years were decidedly underwhelming, and he had a couple seasons. Every single season he's had a pressure to sack rate above 20%, which is exactly what he had last year. But he handles pressure extremely well. Second in the FBS in overall pressure grade. Second with a 123.5 NFL passer rating when pressured. And led the country in big-time throws when pressured. And when we're looking at translating collegiate to NFL performance, is he a fifth year? Yeah, but those two key metrics, you know, you're looking at one, obviously elusiveness there too. I mean, that kind of goes without saying with him, but his ability to handle that pressure, you know, and his escapability and his ability to throw downfield with a nice, clean overhand delivery. I haven't heard too many people really knocking his stroke. You know, it's, he gets into it quick. JJ McCarthy's got a little bit of a loop. I don't see that with Daniels, and if he's going to succeed, it's because I think of those two traits that we just talked about, plus his escapability.
But then what concerns you the most about Jaden Daniels? Let's get into the good stuff, right? Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Heisman Trophy, blah, 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 blah. What did he do bad?
All right. Well, it's what scares me is we talked about the pressure and how he had a good grade and how he handled it well. Well, some of that also can be a detriment because when he's moving, and he was, you know, this is as athletic a QB as you're going to find, really, outside of Anthony Richardson, which doesn't count because he had the most freakish combine in history. But when he's moving, it's a crutch for him to use his legs in a manner that no one else in this class and few guys really do outside of like a Malik Willis type, right? So when he was moved off his spot and he's off script and he's off platform, he threw the ball 20% of the time, all right? The NFL average is a 57% throw rate when flushed, when off platform.
That's insane. 20%. Like those numbers are almost irreconcilably different. Like, he did not play the position like anyone else who has been successful, and that's why the Malik Willis thing is scary, because that was, like, the big knock. Malik Willis could, like, kind of spin it in college. It was low level of competition relative
against to plumbers. Yeah.
Against plumbers. Like, you thought maybe he could translate that. I'm pretty sure Malik Willis literally got benched in a preseason game because Mike Vrabel was so mad he kept running. They were like, no, Willis, we need to, like, we don't care if, honestly, if you even take the sack. We need to see you throw. That's like, this is evaluation mode. And he refused. He could not be told directly not to do that. He still did it. And it's terrifying that that's a trait, one of the few traits, but a trait that Jaden Daniels shares with Malik Willis, who seems to kind of be on his way out of the league.
Yeah, exactly. Unless he can learn how to catch maybe a wideout. But, yeah, and with Daniels, too, it's a symptom of he gets to that three ticks, you know, one, two, three. And you'll see even at times where there isn't pressure, he's bailing anyways, because he knows that chances are the defense at that point, after we've already got past three clicks, they're probably pretty far down the field. And a lot of times they were, and he knows he's got just a wide open, beautiful meadow to frolic through for yet another 20-plus yard run, you know, because he had more explosive plays than anybody in the history of the SEC. But a lot of it's the legs, and you get, like, is he going to get RG3'd at the next level? Where he looks good for a little while, but hey, he's skinny too, and he took the hardest hits of any quarterback in the class.
He did.
Jumping into some tackles where he's getting just thrown on the ground. Like, he's reckless in the way he runs. He's not going to have the same space in the NFL that he did before, and his tendency, he can't be run for us, the NFL, as discussed. He has to settle. Can he find that state of zen when everything is collapsing around him and be able to deliver a strike? And I think that's really the question and how that translates for me.
I remain very much torn on how to talk about Jaden Daniels because, I mean, the guy is going to be freakish for fantasy. Let's just be honest about it. Like, it's going to be great.
I mean, it's
crazy.
The pass rate under pressure in part was so low because he loves fleeing the pocket. I think that's maybe to that extreme degree, a detriment to real life success that you just don't play the position like anyone else. But the fact that like the dude averaged, I think, nearly 10 yards a carry on scrambles in college, at least that he did last year, I believe, and loves to scramble. And that's a cheat code for fantasy. He could be a pretty bad thrower and take a lot of sacks.
I don't really know how to talk about him because I'm out here saying he's a potential mega bust.
I mean, that's the Justin Fields setup, right?
He's going to come out and he's going to rush for 200 yards in his first game, and I'm going to have 100,000 people telling me to cope harder, you know? And I'm going to say, no, I said he's going to be great for fantasy, but his team lost 26-3.
So. I've already made this.
Justin Fields last year at Dynasty was a first-round pick.
Yeah,
last
it's very Justin Fields-like.
But yeah, I don't know, man. Even Justin Fields will throw. Like, with Jaden Daniels, I've already made this point, but I feel like with his, like, propensity to tuck and run, so well known by the most normie fan down to, like, the most dialed-in defensive coordinator, like, the defense might be like, oh, man, I cannot wait till this dude runs because I'm going to just
I mean, him. That also happened to Justin Fields. He couldn't even stay healthy because of that exact reason.
So that's – I do wonder if that's standing between Jaden Daniels and a legendary fantasy season where, like, the defense is just, like, waiting for – like, they cannot wait. Like, Josh Allen, like, please just throw. Cam Newton, throw the ball, please. Jaden Daniels, like, oh, man, I can't wait.
Jaden's going to have some great, like, he's going to have an all-time great rookie points per game season. Don't ask me how many games that amounts to. Like,
yeah, four.
I'm going to further date us real quick, where I was saying, like, with Jaden Daniels, it is also not great that he essentially has, like, a jackass highlight reel. Like, and there's Bam Margera running right into a concrete wall for no reason at all. Like, not really sure. Jaden Daniels needed to jump into a lake that they just told him was 3 feet deep.
And speaking of lake, I mean,
did he just get hit with another paint gun in the face? Sorry, Garrett.
No, do one problem. More. No, do one more. Do one more.
I was like, yep, go.
No, I was like, did they seriously need to drop a water balloon full of cement directly?
I swear to God, I had boxing glove full of cement lined up if you didn't have one.
Oh, sorry, Erica. Continue.
No, just the quickest thing. What are the chances that Jaden Daniels' career is almost a near complete mirror image of RG3's right down the same team and the number two pick? Yeah. Everything.
Like shot for shot remake comes to mind.
Really? Yeah, it's just a sequel. Why not? We do it all over Hollywood every time.
I've talked to Washington fans. I live obviously in Maryland and a lot of Washington fans, and they have conceded that this is going to happen, that they're going to draft Jaden Daniels. He's going to be hurt within 15 minutes, and the franchise is going to be terrible for another 10 years.
Wow. We got to get Matthew Berry, our resident Washington Redskins fans, opinion on this, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, Mr. Jaden Daniels, he's setting up an all-time the haters can, you know, like we're all doubting. I don't know if everyone more doubted a number two overall pick like before the draft. So I guess we'll see what happens.
Maybe Zach Wilson. I feel like there was a lot of doubt about Zach Wilson.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Hey, and look, that worked out.
And it did.
That worked out. That worked out for the Jets, you know, big time.
Was Carson Wentz second overall? There was a lot of
Wentz was second overall. Yeah, Wentz was going to win an MVP.
I know. I mean,
he was.
The doubters got absolutely jammed up until he just lost it. He just got the yips, right? But like the doubters were really struggling for like 3 years.
You know what? I think Carson Wentz's career really turned south. It's a trait I think he might share with Jaden Daniels. Carson Wentz, man, like that guy really liked to run. And boy, did he really like to take big hits. And yeah. Unlike Jaden Daniels, he was not an elite runner.
Yeah.
And,
but he was massive. He was
I was going to say he was thick, though.
He was like Ben Roethlisberger, but he thought he was Lamar Jackson. Like, dude, stop.
He was like, yeah, he was like truly the opposite. He had the same desire to run as Jaden Daniels and had the opposite problem where, like, he could physically take a few more hits than Jaden Daniels. He was getting 2 yards beyond scrimmage, so maybe don't.
So we're concerned about Jaden Daniels. We're not nearly as concerned about Brock Bowers these days, apparently, Eric. But who would you say the biggest reach is amongst – we got to get some clicks, so we got to say who's bad.
Come on,
who do you think the biggest reach is amongst the skill players, including quarterbacks, who are commonly being mocked into the first round right now? Like, who are teams and maybe just, like, draft aficionados, like, just trying too hard to make a thing in the first round on Thursday?
Well, Pat, I usually put on the Bah Humbug hat after the draft for when me and Kyle put in our draft grades. That's when it's full heel. Growing a goatee and everything when I do that. You know I'm the bad guy. Steven Seagal style. So that being said, if I had to go with a bust, I'm going to go with Adonai Mitchell, A.D. Mitchell. Mm-hmm. Really intriguing in terms of his entire physical profile. You know, you look at him at 205, you know, running in the 4.3s. That is some serious business here. But you know, you looked at the way he was used each of those 3 years in college. And as a freshman at Georgia, productive but limited snaps. Like he was protected. And there was like, what's going on? Why isn't he, if he's productive, why isn't he being let loose? And then kind of, you know, had it, didn't have the season he wanted to in his second year. So he went over to Texas and, hey, to his credit, established himself as the wide receiver two off outside of Worthy, but he's never the top billing. And you watch his tape, and when it comes to taking plays off, Adonai Mitchell is without peer in the upper end of this wide receiver class. He's the elite when it comes to, if he's not getting the ball, everybody knows it because he's telling you he's not getting the ball with his nonverbal communications. All right. So that's something that is not going to fly in the NFL. And obviously we've learned that he's a type 1 diabetes type guy. I mean, there's been inconsistency with his play. I am not a doctor. I have no idea, you know, how that all, you know, sort of works. But, you know, the insulin spikes, things like that, there is an element of inconsistency to his play. I don't know if that has.
Well, there's lots of NFL players who successfully navigate type 1 diabetes. I tend to like ignore like this character concern, like it seems like an absurd character, but they're saying like he doesn't manage it well, that like he's not, doesn't take it seriously enough. Who knows
if that's actually they'll handle that.
Exactly. That seemed like a pretty absurd, that seemed like a silly season one to me.
Yeah. Like, you know, you can't eat like Lamar Odom, you know, with the junk food diet. Yeah. I mean, obviously you can't do that, but it's more so that, again, it's the style of his play, the demeanor almost. And it's the sort of the same feeling I got about Jameson Williams when I just observed his mannerisms at the combine. And I'm like, this kid doesn't think this is any big deal here. What's going on, Jameson Williams? You're at the combine here, buddy. And he's just loosey. I mean, just like he didn't care. And that sort of attitude, I feel like, if you're going to be casual about being an NFL wide receiver, you know, and if you're taking plays off and you don't have that statistical production profile that just reaches out and hits you in the face with it, that concerns me.
Is he guaranteed to go in the first round? Kyle, you have him mocked to the Cowboys at number 24, Mr. A.D. Mitchell.
I still think he's pretty likely to go in the first. I mean, guarantee? I'd say not. Like, these are concerns that I think, I mean, I know for sure are on the radar of all 32 teams, and they're concerns that, especially in the first 16 picks, like, they're probably taking him off your board if you're picking 12 or 13. You're saying, we're not taking him here. If he makes it to us later in the draft, sure. Do I think it's enough of a concern that he doesn't go in the top 32 picks? I don't think so. No guarantees, but I do not think so. His line still is 27.5 right now. I still think he goes in the first. I think he has the talent when he wants to of like a top 16 pick. But as Eric pointed out, like just plainly does not always want to, you know, execute on that talent.
Is that why? Why did he wash out at Georgia, Eric? Was it just like not a fit with the coaching staff? Because like he was on the current closest thing we have to a dynasty and then transferred. What was the story with A.D. Mitchell at Georgia?
You know, I don't know exactly, you know, kind of what transpired there. I do know that he did. It seemed like after his freshman season, he expected more of a prominent role as a sophomore. And he didn't get the role that I think he really wanted. He was put through sort of, you know, the rotation out there in the receiver line. But he wanted to be, a prominent fixture in a prolific passing offense, and Georgia didn't always kind of do that, you know, and he wasn't going to be the top dog with Brock Bowers in town. And he knew that. He knew that was always kind of be the focus. And that offense didn't always really do a lot with the outside receivers either, you know, and that look, Jermaine Burton left too. So I think usage could have a real effect on what that was. Cause it wasn't just him, you know, Burton headed out too, and they had to restock the cupboard, you know, kind of on the fly last year.
Eric, we've talked a lot about Texas wide receivers. We talk incessantly about Washington wide receivers. We haven't talked as much on the show about Oregon's Troy Franklin. You guys don't have him in your first round mock currently in rotoworld.com. Curious. He had a humongous season last year under Mr. Dan Lanning and like, you know, the Oregon kind of, I was going to say unstoppable machine, but then it was stopped twice by Washington. So it was stoppable. Are we underrating Troy Frank? Because by underrating, I mean, we haven't been talking about him on the show. What's the deal with Mr. Troy Franklin?
Sure. Well, you look at him, and I would think the thing that people were talking about this offseason about Troy Franklin was something that, I don't know if I've ever really heard the furor over a gauntlet drill the way that we saw about Troy Franklin, where he was bobbing and weaving his way through that, as opposed to the idea is to run a straight line as fast as possible while catching passes, which Keon Coleman excelled at, and he ran over 20 miles an hour and hummed his way through it. Not so much for Mr. Franklin, but, you know, you look at him, and I almost – the comps that I would like people to think when they see Troy Franklin in terms of his usage in college, in terms of the offense – is Jalin Hyatt from last year, where he was a slot running those, you know, running down the field unabated. But and Franklin is obviously more of a wide out, you know, 81-19 wide to slot ratio. But it was the way that they were used in the offense, because, you know, Oregon is either running. Bo Nix had a 2.44 time to throw, is the lowest in the nation, because he's in the gun catching, reading, quick, pivoting, throwing. It's just a mechanical sort of a system. But when Franklin's getting targeted and when he's getting that downfield stuff, it's RPO, you know, click back, look off, left side, go ball, one-on-one, there goes Troy Franklin, you know? So he really was in a great spot with the offense, with Tez Johnson working all the underneath routes extremely well. He got to kind of be that one-dimensional wide receiver in a mold of a Jalin Hyatt. Now, can he run the full route tree? Is he heavy enough? The BMI concerns, where he was at 175, you know, where he ran his 40 at, and then at his pro day, he's 9 pounds heavier, like 184 or whatever it was, and he's not quite as ultra thin because he's in that, you know, 6'2.5", 6'3" range. So my concerns, BMI. Can he get off the line on a jam? Tyquan Thornton couldn't. We saw what happened with Jalin Hyatt. He fell to the third round and really wasn't able to do too much for the Giants. Can he show the more well-rounded skill set that helps him take the next step, or will he kind of just be one of those middling receivers that shuttle in and out of our fantasy lineups?
Is there any chance he sneaks into the first round? Again, you guys don't have him in the first round in your mock draft, but
I really don't think so.
Yeah, you weren't.
I'd put it like 20% maybe. If there's a run on receivers like before the Chiefs are up and they really want one, I actually think he could fill some of that. They need an outside big play threat. Well, But I think there's probably more receivers there that they want, unless there's a big run ahead of them. So it's non-zero, but it's closer to zero than even 50, I'd say.
He did just turn 21. His frame might be viewed as projectable.
It should be. He's not a short, thin. He's not a short, low weight guy. He's like medium to tall, and just came in really, really light. Protons, you pointed out, it's not the size entirely that's the problem. It's the BMI that he just physically doesn't have an NFL body. Maybe yet, maybe ever.
He did right. stay at the same school for 3 years, which is pretty rare these days. So there's some bullet points in his favor.
And a five-star prospect.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a really good statistical profile. It's, as Froton pointed out, like digging in, it's limited in what he was asked to do. But I think like NFL.com's Lance Zierlein comped him to Chris Olave. Obviously, it's like the high-end outcome, right? But that outside deep threat can consistently rack up air yards, and like sometimes they're frustrating and they don't always hit. That's a really valuable guy to have on your offense. But the downside is Hyatt or even like another guy on this team, Darius Slayton, just an occasional pops up for a big game. It's useful, but for fantasy purposes, we don't care too much. And honestly, like the Giants don't even like Darius Slayton. They try to trade him every year. So for real life purposes,
I'd rather have a guy who converts air yards personally.
And like that could be the problem. He could be a non-converter for his whole career. Like he could be not strong enough to win contested catches. And honestly, 4-for-1's really fast, but like that's not lights out speed for a guy who weighs 176 pounds.
Right.
Maybe he's not fast enough to keep up with the cornerback who can also weigh 175 and run a 4.39 or whatever. So yeah, I think he's somewhere on that. Like, I guess if you consider it a spectrum of like outside field stretchers, Darius Slayton and Hyatt ended up playing a lot outside as a rookie as well. Darius Slayton, Jalen Hyatt, all the way up to a more promising Chris Olave, who also some people still don't even like. I think he's very good, but
we'll stick with Oregon really quick. I was going to ask you about this a little later in the show. I won't say, you probably don't remember what your first thing you told me about Bo Nix when I asked you about Bo Nix yesterday. But you're not a gigantic Bo Nix fan. I don't think you'd be taking out number 12 overall, say, if you were the Denver Broncos, or if you were Denny number one overall.
Yeah, come
on. Where Denny's got Bo Nix in the mock draft in his mind. But is a first-round pick on Bo Nix just an insane proposition to you, Eric? Or is there something – is there true projectability here with the ninth-year senior Bo Nix?
Hey, I mean, you know, Denny, he likes that Brock Purdy profile. You know, he's seen it happen.
I'm giving in. Shanahan
system. Yeah,
I'm giving in. I concede.
He gets it. He's got a type, and that's fine, Denny. But your type is not the same as my type. It's not you. It's me, okay? I'm going to have to break up with Bo Nix here. It's simply – he's a great system guy. It goes back a little bit about the Oregon situation. He's getting the ball. He's firing it. 2.4 seconds. It's in.
Everything you say, Denny, is just, yes, yes, this is all great.
This is what I'm talking about.
He's not running. He's not looking the full field, you know?
Yes.
He's not going to sit here and diagnose and manipulate and everything. He is doing what he's told, like a good soldier. Just like Denny did when his dad was listening to Rush Limbaugh in the car. He listened to him. Yes, Dad, you were right. My Maha Rushi. So
that's right.
That's the bonus. He's the Rush Limbaugh of quarterbacks here, Denny. Oh, so I'm going off right now. We're going off the rails.
I haven't heard that comp.
That's the first time I heard Lance. Lance Zierlein had a different comp than that.
Lance Zierlein. I respect Lance, but you know, he and I think I'm more irreverent is kind of how I look at these things. But you know, the yards per attempt, 6.8 yards per attempt. That's the third lowest of 95 qualifying quarterbacks. You know, 10.9% of his passes, 20 plus yards downfield. That was the lowest in the nation for any QB with 50 plus deep attempts, and pretty much 11%. All of them went to Troy Franklin. You know, so it's. He's doing what he's asked to do.
Yes, and he is, and that's all that matters.
It's always a great trade in the populace.
Look, here's the thing. I want a guy who will do exactly what he's told and nothing else. And nothing else. This is how you win in the NFL. You don't need a guy Drake May who's running around like a chicken with his head cut off. You don't need that. You just need a guy like Nix who will dump it off over and over and over and check down again and again and again, and you win 12 games a year. That's it. That's the modern NFL.
You win 12 games a year until you get up quote, upset in the divisional round.
I mean, yeah, sure, sure. Okay, Bo Nix is not going to win multiple Super Bowls. He's not going to be a Hall of Famer, obviously. But it, Rich Gannon in today's NFL is elite. Elite.
Rich Gannon, let's go pull up the box score to Super Bowl 37 or whatever.
Oh, okay, yes, one game. Pull up a box score for one game. Let's see. Yeah. Let's see how it looks. I don't know. I love that prototype for the modern NFL. In a year after,
and here's the problem. Here's where the problem keeps coming in. For that prototype, you need a player who's like Bo Nix's ceiling is that you need that to be the floor. Is why like that's why you can't. Oh, he's got such a great system. Like if his ceiling is system quarterback, you need the floor to be system quarterback.
I hear you, and that's a valid point, and that undercuts everything I'm saying. But here's the thing. I think that is what GMs and front offices are more and more seeking, you know, because of a situation like Eric mentioned of Brock Purdy, a guy who just does what he's told and really nothing much more. Although he's not Jimmy G. I'm not reducing everybody to Jimmy G, but I also think Bo Nix is way better than a Jimmy G who is also did what he's told. You know,
I think at his ceiling, Bo Nix could be to a plus because Bo Nix was actually really good under pressure, and he wasn't just taking checkdowns under pressure. I believe of the top six quarterbacks, he had the highest, like beyond the sticks level of throws when under pressure on late downs. Like he doesn't just give up and check down or throw it away under pressure, and he typically makes the first down happen. And he's pretty mobile. Like I think in his best rushing season, he had more rushing yards in that year alone than like Penix's entire career, right? Because Penix just doesn't want to run. So imagine if Tua could work under pressure and didn't just like crumple and easily take the sack, and if he could scramble a little bit. Yeah. That guy like is really interesting. I still sort of agree with Pat that is it enough? Maybe. Imagine if Tua ran for 600 yards.
That's
interesting. But man, do I want to shoot for the ceiling with like Drake May, which is obviously why May is going to go higher. But the other version of I want to shoot for the ceiling is like, we're not drafting Bo Nix, guys. We're going to lose for a year and draft next year's top five quarterback instead of Bo Nix with the 23rd overall pick.
I just want to mention one thing here as we're talking about system quarterbacks, check down artists, right? Last year, Jake Browning, who was re-signed today.
For two-year extension, deal, lots of money.
Jake Browning was better than Joe Burrow in every measurable category.
Yeah.
In every metric.
I'm just going to pretend you didn't say
and that's I'm not because actually do that. That's not because he's better than Burrow. It's because that's what modern defenses give up. They give up the tiny little checkdowns that the quarterbacks who do.
Exactly. So you don't want a quarterback who can only do what the defense wants you to do. Like the defense, Jake Browning's checking down 60 minutes. There's a dub, folks, yeah, right, for us.
I get that.
There's a dub for us. They still fear the people who actually break the system, break the model, go outside. And that's still what the coaches ultimately, except for Sean Payton, who is going to draft Bo Nix.
I will say just one point about what Kyle said. Yes, did he have the best pressure completion rate in the country? He did. He was only pressured 16% of the time, though, which was the lowest in the country. So when he was in the rare occasions that the offensive line for Oregon, you know, a little heat got through on him, he was successful. But he didn't do it that often. So is it something that we can say is a, you know, put it in stone, that's a repeatable trait that he can recreate at the NFL?
We will be right back after this. Sunday on NBC and Peacock, the IndyCar series continues with a stop at Barber Motorsports Park. That's again Sunday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern, only on NBC and Peacock.
Did you know Bridgestone developed a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials? Making a difference today for future generations. That's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
Jake from State Farm here, hanging out with Mel's Mow & Grow. Mel chose State Farm for small business insurance because his local agent is a small business owner too. So she knew how to help him personalize his policies. And now, he's rolling in the green. Like a good neighbor. Guys, I'm trying to do the line.
Oh, sorry, Jake.
It's all good. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Wasn't my best promo read.
I mean, it was top 20.
I tried.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't fumble on a very simple word because it has two of the same letters back to back.
No, I know. Don't even ask me to have success saying success. But I just did. What do we still want to talk about there? Eric, let's talk about someone that you actually like. I believe you really like USC running back Marshawn Lloyd. Is that correct? Someone we've not talked about on the show at all, because we barely talked about the running backs because it seems like none of them are good this year. And we don't even entirely know like which ones are going in the second round. We know none of them are going in the first round. Give us the skinny on Mr. Marshawn.
I get to break the show seal on Marshawn Lloyd
You do. Oh. His name has not been uttered on the show. That's actually not a joke.
Let's rectify that, shall we, gentlemen? Marshawn Lloyd, 115 carries last year, 7.1 yards per carry. Not just that, 47 broken tackles, a 41% broken tackle rate, 177 elusiveness rating according to PFF. That's the fourth highest in the country, right? So 4 yards after contact, that's the elite mark we want to be sitting at. If you're doing 4 yak in college, you are checking that box emphatically, and he did so there, right? But you're asking, okay, didn't catch any passes at South Carolina at all. Had an ACL his freshman year, you know, took a little time coming back, but here are his fourth year at USC, okay? Can he catch passes? Oh, not only did he catch passes, only got 18 targets, caught 13 of them for 232 yards. Number one in the country with 17.8 yards per reception. That's 2.5 yards more than the next closest, okay? So not worried about him all. He was so valued by Lincoln Riley that he split him out wide on passing downs 10% of the time. Very rare to see running backs out there. You'll see him get slot action 10% of the time out there wide, really good. And if you look at the tape too, a couple of high-level catches, back shoulder throws at the sticks that really accentuates everything you're seeing there with that data, all right? So when it comes to his physical dominance, like, it's all there. The problem is he didn't get a chance to put a full career together because he was injured as a freshman and really had some time where it was an ACL, but like it was a double ligament. It took some time to come back for that, but he's there. And he has performed obviously at a high level for USC. I have him as a top four running back. There's a four running back tier for me at the top, and he is in that tier.
Well, this sound like a day two pick? I mean, a round two, or two, is he safely day? Is he safely day two?
Let's say I feel that. Safe with day two. You'll definitely be a third round pick. It kind of depends, you know. Jonathan Brooks is the best pure running back I think of this group, but he's coming off an ACL. Other than that, I think it's kind of interchangeable. It's going to be close between him, Benson, and Jalen Wright. I think are all very close in terms of how they'll be valued.
One thing that popped to me when I was looking at Lloyd's profile was he was fifth in PFF's elusive rating among all running backs in the nation last year.
Correct.
So a guy who can create, you know, on his own, not just get what's blocked. And I know it's a weak running back class, but someone like him did sort of pop in some categories. Yeah.
What's the deal, Eric, with this running back class? Is it just the way they're being used now? Or is it just a fluke, random, weak class? Because like the bell cows are few and far between. No one with like the popping with a three-down profile the way Bijan Robinson or Saquon Barkley did. Is it a function of the way running back is trending, or is it just a random blip on the running back radar?
I think it's kind of the class, you know, because you've kind of – it's kind of a – outside of those top four guys that I listen, I feel like those four, depending on their landing spots, are the four most attractive profiles that I've seen over the course of their college careers. But then you get into just questions with that group. Okay, is it going to be Blake Corum? A lot of people love Blake Corum, and I get it. And Pat and I talked about this last night. Blake Corum averaged 2.47 yards after contact last year. That was 137th out of 152 running backs with 100-plus carries. Of the 41,000-yard rushers last year, Blake Corum's 4.7 yards per carry was the third lowest of that group. One more stat. I know you love him. 23 missed tackles forced in 218 carries. We just talked about Marshawn Lloyd, 41% broken tackle rate. That's a 10.5% broken tackle rate. That's four times worse in terms of his ability to make people not tackle him than Marshawn Lloyd was. That is the lowest broken amount of broken tackles for any of the top 35 running backs in terms of usage in the entire FBS. I mean, it's just outright terrible advanced numbers.
Well, especially in the offense he was in, where they were just like, you know, pile driving people, and he still can't even get any nice advanced metrics.
Absolutely. I mean, that is a real issue. And then you look at Braylon Allen, and he, I thought I was watching it in 0.75 speed, watching his feet, you know, like every time I watch that guy every year, I'm a fade. He's a product of that Wisconsin offensive line and system and scheme. He's just not good. And I see people have him like RB2 or RB3. His feet are too slow. He's 240 pounds. He's going to be a poor man's A.J. Dillon. Take him.
Ugh, man. Oh, is that possible? Oh, my God.
I don't think that actually is possible. It is possible. They re-signed him. I still don't understand.
Economically challenged. I didn't mean to say poor.
Someone is going – there's going to have to be a 30 for 30 on the Packers' obsession with AJ.
Oh, I got to hear it, man. I need to know why they keep going back to this guy.
Sobbing Matt LaFleur. Take the camera off. We couldn't stop.
The thing is, though, it's not like he had like a magical 8-game run 1 year.
No,
he never done anything.
It was one game in the snow.
That's right. In the snow, and that's what he drafted him for, because it's like, as the season gets longer and the weather gets colder, we want the big back to barrel through guys, which
and
is just
and it
nonsense.
Never gets cold in Green Bay anymore.
It's just nonsense, and they should build a dome anyway. But you know, Dillon hasn't done anything, and they still use him. It's amazing.
I absolutely love to hear Braylon Allen compared to AJ Dillon. That's real good stuff. Real good sign.
It's the truth, my friend.
We heard some of the running backs you don't like, Eric. Who's an under the radar running back that you love heading into draft weekend?
Oh yeah, some down the board guys that I have some interest in. I like, well, first off, Kamani Vidal is probably the most underrated. He's the best G5 running back in this class, and just given his bowling ball, 5'8", 214, his incredible contact balance. He led the nation in rushing last year. He had a 90th percentile run grade in each of the past two seasons, with a 35% career breakaway rate, and he's elusive, you know, 119 elusiveness rating. I just think that the way his style and his low to the ground kind of the way that he can absorb hits, I think that'll translate. I think he'll be effective, and he's pretty far down the board. You probably get him in like the fourth round of your rookie drafts. If we're going like, you know, UDFA real late, I like Michael Wiley for Arizona. I'm sure he's probably not a household name here on the pod.
I've never even heard of Arizona. Is that a state?
Right. No, Mexico North. So they are California East. You know, if I'm in San Diego. So 2022, Wiley was awesome. Like, he wasn't good. He was awesome. I think he led the country in elusiveness rating, 204 elusiveness, 46% breakaway rate, 93rd percentile rush grade, 6.9 yards per carry, and then his ability to catch the ball. Like, he's 212 pounds at 5'11", but he's not like a little scat back type. But his profiles as his receiving acumen does profile like that. 36 of 45 receptions, 2022, 349 yards, 1.4 yards per route. Last year, he even was better than that. Despite being banged up, he had a hard time kind of going between the tackles. I think he had an upper body thing. But still, like, his receiving acumen showed up. 2.2 yards per reception on 34 targets. That is outrageous. You're not going to see that pretty much anywhere for a running back. It just doesn't happen. So with his ability to both run between the tackles that he couldn't do as much in 23 that he had shown previously, if he's healthy and you can get himself, you know, just in a running back room, I think he could be an incredible, at least third down back. He has that profile. But he's a rare scat back who has enough build and sort of, you know, vision to be able to do the between the tackles work. He's a deep, deep, deep shot that I think you could see become somebody that I haven't heard a word about from anybody. So there's a deep, deep one for you.
I wanted to mention Kamani Vidal from Troy, which Eric just mentioned. He had three games last year of over 200 rushing yards. One of those games, he had 233 and five touchdowns against Appalachian State. He also, weirdly, had a game with 300 total yards and zero touchdowns last year, which is
hard to do.
Yeah, obviously he played at Troy, but I'm pretty sure he led the country in, like, attempts, yards, yards after contact, I believe.
Yep, 295 totes. 295 in a 13-game skate season.
Missed tackles forced by a wide margin. Like, he crushed everyone and missed tackles forced. And carries of 10-plus yards, too. He was a good chunk runner. So I really liked him. I think I also ranked him as my highest G5-ranked player in my running back.
Eric, extremely quickly, is my guy Cody Schrader going to get drafted? Or is he
that guy ain't getting drafted, man.
Is he too slow?
Man, Cody Schrader, he got invited to the Senior Bowl, first off. So, like, respect for that. And there, he caught the ball really well, which is something he didn't get to do hardly at all in college. Because, as you know, being a Missouri fan yourself, he was rode hard and put away wet by the Tigers and Eli Drinkwitz this year, man. That whole second half of the year, he's cranking out 25 carries a game. But I do think that that's going to be his ceiling, being a Missouri legend.
That's fine. There are worse things. There's only one Division I football program in the state, so he can make a career out of that. Eric, who will end the show with an under-the-radar wide receiver that you love? Like, see, we like to go negative, but who's someone that you love? An under the radar wide receiver.
An under the radar wide receiver I love. I like Malik Washington. Malik Washington is a dude. He didn't even get a Senior Bowl invite. He's small. He's got a slot profile, but he worked the outside for Virginia and just got. It was so obvious that they couldn't do anything else as a team that they just threw the ball to him all the time. Every defense knew it was coming. Nobody could stop it, and just the fast twitch. I mean, he could be one of those extremely dependable slot receivers that just gets by in PPR formats, cranking out nine targets, catching six, you know, for 65 and a touch. Like, he's got that profile all day of just that dependable, gets open, quick, savvy, all of that. Everything about his profile way down the board there. I just can't help it. And then if you're looking for guys that I think could be taken a little earlier, you know, that could be Ricky Pearsall needs to be talked about. He's incredible. He's probably a second rounder, was probably a fifth coming into the postseason evaluation process, but his hands are just ridiculous. And I'll go with, again, somebody who's third rounder or later, probably fourth rounder, Jalen McMillan for Washington. All three of the Washington wide receivers, McMillan, Polk, and Adunze are stars. And it kind of freaks me out a little bit about Penix because he had some throws that they really bailed him out on that could present problems in the pros.
So yeah, the Washington guys have actually come up on the show because they are just like they pop on they film, on Sports Reference.
Yeah. You know,
I
had to get this thought out because Malik Washington has caught my attention several times. He was 10th in yards per route run among receivers last year and across the nation. 10th. Like,
for sure, he was first in catch, first in yak, in missed tackles forced.
The thing that catches my eye about Malik Washington is that he has a 2019 Sports Reference, though, also.
Yep. I mean, that's why the analytics people are like, he played, I believe, 4 years at Northwestern, didn't record a true breakout, 30% dominator until he transferred. He came close in his final year.
There's no such thing as a true breakout in the Northwestern passing attack, okay? That doesn't exist.
But, man, the fifth year was really good. Like, I give him credit there, and I think we get a lot of, Malachi Corley hype, like, he's this year's Deebo Samuel. There is no this year's Deebo Samuel. It'll probably never happen again. But, like, if you want the tackle breaker, like, slot can really get past dudes with the ball in his hands,
I just take the discount and go Malik Washington over Malachi Corley, who seems to get a lot of hype in dynasty circles. Washington has that profile.
If you're going to have a fifth-year breakout, it needs to be for 110 catches, 1,400 yards. And that's what Malik Washington did at UVA. So that is a really, really interesting one.
Is that Xavier Legette quip? Is that what that is? Fifth-year breakout, if that's what you're going to do?
Hey, if you're going to – you got to break all the way out if you're going to be the fifth-year breakout.
You got to break all the way.
Yeah, you got to do it all the way. Just really, really, really good stuff from Eric Fred. By the way, I'm having intrusive thoughts about more like Jaden Daniels, jackass type stunts. Did he really need to get a pie full of bees thrown at his face on third down?
Right. Why did they put him in an outhouse and push him down a hill?
Why did he give all the defensive linemen tasers before this play?
Did he really need to get hit by a cigarette boat going full speed? Wow. And how did he even survive that one? He got up. He was in there the next play.
He's tough.
He is. Jaden Daniels is very, very.
Not
very
a lot tough. Of quarterbacks are going to take paintballs to the nuts for a game.
Nope, they're not, Eric. They're not going to do that. And we are not going to continue the show because, unfortunately, we're out of time. We're out of players to talk about, but we're going to be talking about everyone all week. Like I said, keep it locked to rotoworld.com for check out. Kyle, Connor, and Eric's mock. Check out Eric's going to have a day two mock, like we said. Check out all of the pre-draft profiles, the majority of which were written by Eric. Kyle's in on that game. Zach Kruger's in on that game. I'm ever so slightly in on that game. Aditya Foldiori's in on that game. We're going to have so much good content on the website all week. That includes a reaction podcast Friday. So for Eric Froton, for Denny Carter, for Kyle Dvorak, I'm Patrick Daugherty. Thank you so much for listening. We're almost through draft week. We'll catch you later.
While no one knows what tomorrow may bring, Bridgestone is working toward a more positive outlook. With innovations like developing a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials. It's just one of the many ways Bridgestone is making a difference today for generations to come. Because that's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.